Welcome to Headlines. This is Ari Wasserman sitting in for David Lichtenstein. Today we have a very practical halacha lemaisa topic that is oftentimes in the news between us and our cousins who live in the land of Israel and around the land of Israel, and internally between different groups of Jews that have different opinions as to what we're going to be discussing today, and that is talking about Har HaBayis. Can we enter into Har HaBayis nowadays? And if not, what should be done with Har HaBayis? We're going to talk about those two questions. We're going to talk about many other questions as well. Initially, we're going to speak with the Gaon, Rabbi Yitzchak Breidowitz, the well-known posek, the senior lecturer at Yeshivas Or Sameach. And then we're going to go on to have a fascinating couple of discussions separately with two brothers. The first one being Rabbi Yehuda Glick, probably the best known activist in getting more rights for Jews on Har HaBayis. So that is going to be an interesting discussion. Rabbi Yehuda Glick, who has gone on to Har HaBayis over 1,000 times. And then we will go on and speak with Rabbi Menachem Glick, who is the senior mashkiach at Yeshivas Beis Yisrael, and get his view on going on to Har HaBayis nowadays. To introduce our topic, I'm going to start out with the vort that was given by the Sfas Emes. He gave it on Tisha B'Av that fell on Shabbos, and he says as follows, that in Parshas Hazinu, there's a pasuk in Dvarim, Lamed Beis, Pasuk Yud Beis, Hashem Badad Yanchenu Ve'ein Imo El Nechar, HaKadosh Baruch Hu alone. The word is Hashem Badad Yanchenu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu alone guides Klal Yisrael, supervises Klal Yisrael. The Ramban explains as follows, that it's only HaKadosh Baruch Hu directly guiding us, and it is not through a malach, it's not through a sar, it's not through a moshe. There's no intermediary that is intervening or getting in the way, is acting directly or indirectly. In fact, it's simply HaKadosh Baruch Hu going directly and supervising Klal Yisrael. And in fact, as Sfas Emes continues, he says that the Navi Yirmiyahu says a similar thing, but maybe it could be read as the opposite thing. Yirmiyahu was crying in pain, Eicha, how is it, Yashva Badad, that Klal Yisrael sits, and that's the same word, Badad, alone. And the implication is that we sit alone without a Kadosh Baruch Hu. The Sfas Emes says that is not the case. Klal Yisrael is never alone. We have our Pasuk in Hazinu that tells us, Hashem Badad, it's always a Kadosh Baruch Hu guiding us. And even though we appear to be alone, and even though we believe we're alone, and we feel we are alone, we have the promise, Hashem Badad Yanchenu, it's always going to be a Kadosh Baruch Hu guiding us, not even through a malach, but simply a Kadosh Baruch Hu directly, regardless of the time, regardless of the place, even in Galus, even at a time of Galus. It doesn't matter. We have that Haftacha, Hashem Badad Yanchenu. The Sfas Emes continues and says this word, Badad. What does that stand for? It's the Rosh Tevos, based on a pasuk in Mishle, Bechol Drachecha Da'ehu, that we need to build a relationship, a connection with the Kadosh Baruch Hu in every single thing that we are involved with in our daily lives and throughout our lives. Regardless of where we live, the time in history, whether we're in Galus or not, and regardless of the tremendous sorrow that we are feeling, we have to know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is constantly with us, even in Galus, Imo Anochi Betzara, and we may be feeling those pains and sorrows, and we are feeling that at this time, having gone through and continuing Corona with the numerous deaths that have encountered Klal Yisrael, and the deaths in Meron, and the incidents and the deaths in Karlin, and now with the Miami condo collapse. We have to realize and we have to know, Imo Anochi Betzara, says the Sfas Emes, Galus is indeed not a rejection by HaKadosh Baruch Hu of us, but rather it is HaKadosh Baruch Hu's supervision of us. And he says it's the same thing like Geula. Galus and Geula, they are not opposites, they are sisters, because they are both HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Hanhaga Elokis above us. They are both HaKadosh Baruch Hu supervising us directly, as the Pasuk tells us, Badad Yanchenu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu will always be supervising Klal Yisrael. And he goes on to say that if we can be zoche to realize this, that galus is the same as geula in that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is supervising us regardless of where it is, we will be zoche to have HaKadosh Baruch Hu fulfill the second part of that pasuk in Mishlei of Bechod Rachecha Da'ehu. It ends off as follows, V'hu Yasher Or Chosecha, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will smooth out our paths. HaKadosh Baruch Hu will put these travails, the difficulties, the calamities that have become so common among us, and He will be putting it aside for us. What we need to do is our part, Bechod Rachecha Da'ehu, and then HaKadosh Baruch Hu will certainly do His part, V'hu Yasher Or Chosecha. Continuing with the thought on Eicha, there's something amazing when looking at the prakim in Eicha. First four prakim are in order of the aleph base. Each pasuk, first pasuk aleph, second pasuk base, starts out with a base, third pasuk starts out with a gimel. But of those four prakim, three of them are exceptions in the following way, and this is discussed in the Gemara in Sanhedrin. Instead of having it exactly in the order of aleph, base, gimel, dalet, there's a reverse of two letters. Instead of samech, ayin, pei, in the second, third, and fourth prakim of Eicha, the ayin and pei are reversed. It should have said ayin first and then pei, but it's reversed and it has pei first and then ayin. And Chazal tell us that this is an allusion to the Chet HaMeraglim, who put their pei first, and that's the reverse of the order before their ayin. Says the Gemara as follows, Bishvil Mahikdim pei la ayin. Why does it have the pei first? Before the ayin, it's supposed to be samech ayin pei and not samech pei ayin. And the Mishnah, the Gemara answers as follows, Bishvil meraglim she'amru befihem ma shelo ra'u be'inehem. Because the meraglim said with their mouths what they did not witness with their eyes. They put their mouths first and they made their decision up front. Eretz Yisrael is not going to work out for us. They're supposed to be giving edus. Edus. Ayin. Edus. They're supposed to be giving testimony what their eyes saw. And they're supposed to stay with their mouths only what their eyes saw first. The eye has to come first and then the mouth to pay. But they reversed it. And in fact, that's on this on the pasuk in Eicha. This is what Chazal is discussing. Patsu alayach piem. All your enemies open their mouths wide at you. That's talking about the Chet HaMeraglim. That their mouths came first because they made the decision in advance. So they were talking not about what their eyes really saw, but what they decided. Rashi puts it this way, Shikdimu ma'amar pihem ad shelo ra'u be'ayin. They were speaking, but they weren't speaking about what they saw. They were speaking about what they decided they wanted to see, what they decided, what they wanted to believe. They based it on their personal preferences. They based it on their preconceived notions. And that's why the pei, their mouths, came first, and the ayin, the reality of what they saw, didn't even come second. It was reversed, but they forgot about that totally. And in fact, the Torah is not only teaching us about this tragedy. This was the first tragedy and what carved the way for all the future tragedies on Tisha B'Av. But it's teaching us a lesson that we need to incorporate into our very lives. When we look at people, when we look at events, when we look at halachas, whatever it may be, do we judge them based on our ayin, based on what we really see, what the emes is? Or do we do it like the meraglim, based on the peh? Based on our personal preferences, based on our preconceived notions. And that's what we speak and we believe, based on not reality, not what the eye sees, but what we want it to be, based on our preconceived decisions and biases, but not based on the reality. In fact, just to relate that to our topic a little bit more, I remember I actually learned the sugya of going on to Har HaBayis a number of years ago. And when I started learning the sugya, it's never good to have a preconceived notion when you're going into a sugya. You want to learn through the sugya. You want to learn through the psukim and through the gemara and through the rishonim and through the achronim. And you want to come out with an unbiased psak, with an unbiased view of a sugya. So that's the healthy way to go through a sugya. But when it came to going on to Har HaBayis in the sugya, I was just thinking, looks like equal 50-50. Some people go on, feet, some people don't go on, or more people don't go on, 60-40, 70-30. But there has to be a basis for each of the sides. And I was fairly surprised when I went through the sugya as to where things came out. I'm not going to say how things came out. We're going to be talking it on the show. But I will say that this is a sugya that I wrote up. It's published in one of my volumes called Hegyonei HaParsha. We have put it onto the website so everyone can access it. I hope you do. And you'll see it's an article that I wrote a number of years ago. And it does go through the whole sugya. Can't go through the whole sugya because there are always more poskim to go through. But if people want more information on this topic, that may be a good source for you to get it from. Also posted on the website, and this is very important, we're going to be talking about various locations. We'll be talking about the Temple Mount, which is the contemporary Temple Mount, which is a much larger area than the halachic Har HaBayis, the halachic Temple Mount. And we will be talking about the various details in the Beis HaMikdash, and we'll be talking about what's the Chel, and what's the Azara, and the various places. And it would be very important, be very helpful for those not familiar with the map of the Har HaBayis to take a look. We posted as well on the website what is hopefully going to be a helpful chart to follow through with the various locations that we will be discussing. Before going to our guests, we're going to simply go through the riddle of the week. So for our riddle of the week, I just want to ask a question that I actually may not know the answer to, and it goes as follows. Those who claim that it is not only permitted to go onto Har HaBayis nowadays, but there is a mitzvah even to go on Har HaBayis nowadays. There are people that make that claim that if you don't go, you're missing out on an opportunity, and that could be during the Shalosh Regalim or during non-Shalosh Regalim. Where do we have a source? And this is the question. Where do we have a source? In the Tanakh. In the Bavli, the Yerushalmi, Midrashim, Rishonim, Achronim, up until today, maybe we'll say up until the prior generation, where do we have a source that even when we don't have a Beis HaMikdash, there is a mitzvah to go on to Har HaBayis? I want an explicit source that states that there is a mitzvah to go. Someone arrival the Pasuk in Sefer Dvarim, it's Parshas Re'eh, Perek Yud Beis, Pasuk Hey, that there is a mitzvah. It's talking about the Beis HaMikdash, Ki Ima Lamakam, Asher Yivcha Hashem Elokechem, etc. Lishichna Sidreshu Uvasa Shama, so that you shall seek out the place, the presence of HaKadosh Baruch on the Beis HaMikdash, you should come there. That's a Pasuk, but does anyone say that indeed that is a source? So that's one possibility to research that Pasuk. Another possibility is that there's a mitzvah Mora HaMikdash. Where do we have a source that there it applies nowadays, that it only applies on Har HaBayis? In other words, to fulfill the mitzvah, it only is on Har HaBayis. That's the only location to fulfill the mitzvah. So where do we have a source for that? I'm interested in getting responses. Indeed, that would be one of the arguments that we should go on to Har HaBayis if that's the sole place that we can fulfill a mitzvah nowadays, even in the absence of a Beis HaMikdash.
Rabbeisai, what are your thoughts? 732-806-8700, press number 2. That's for what the Bnei HaYeshiva have to say. Or info@headlinesbook.com. We will post both messages, voicemails, as well as written, unless you request otherwise. But we're interested in what the Olam has to say.
Joining us now is Rabbi Yitzchak Breidowitz. Rabbi Breidowitz is the Rav of Kehilas Or Sameach. He's a senior lecturer at Or Sameach. He is a world-renowned posek, and he is always a pleasure to have here on Headlines. Rabbi Breidowitz, thank you so much for joining us yet again.
Thank you, Rav Ari. I think we may have to stop getting together like this all the time, but Baruch Hashem, it's a pleasure and an honor to be on the show with you.
I always enjoy it, so I look forward to the future. I will give you a break going forward for a little bit, but I look forward to the next time. So, Rabbi Breidowitz, we're talking about Har HaBayis. This is a controversial issue. It is regularly in the news with members of Knesset coming out and saying we have to go up, or we have to not go up at all, and we have to stop people from going up. It's causing too much friction. We have Hamas making claims that the Jews are attacking Al-Aqsa. Lots going on with Har HaBayis, and we have some people who are known to be activists and going up, and many people will not go up. And the question is on a high level before we get into the shitas and the details. What are the high level problems, according to the Machmirim, with going on to Har HaBayis?
Yeah, well, first of all, I'm going to put aside for now the political issues which can result in sakanas nefashos and a human life being endangered, which indeed may override everything. But putting aside the specifics of the pikuach nefesh problems that we face in the modern state of Israel, the primary halachic question is that there are certain areas of the Temple Mount where the Torah prohibits people who are tamei from entering. And if they enter, they're chay of kares. And essentially, the question is, how do you define those areas? And is there a way that you could safely and securely avoid those areas? And that's kind of the basic controversy.
So let's get into the fundamental machlokas here. The famous machlokas of the Rambam and the Ravid. It's always, I have to say, entertaining when the Ravid sells responds to the Rambam that Svaras Atzmo Hizo, Velo Yadati Mainlo, the Rambam made this up. I don't know where he got this from. So if you can tell us, what's the sheet of the Rambam that the Ravid has no interest in, and what's the sheet of the Ravid on the other hand?
Yeah, so this is, as you say, this is really the start of everything. The Rambam has a very famous passage in which he says that although the holiness of Eretz Yisrael perhaps may have been interrupted with the destruction of the temple for purposes of Truma and Maser, that only pertains to the mitzvot Tuliyot Bi'aretz of Eretz Yisrael. But the holiness of Yerushalayim and the Makom HaMikdash, the Rambam says, has never been affected even by Churban. The divine presence is there always in perpetuity. And consequently, all of the laws of the Torah concerning the holiness of the Makom HaMikdash and the various prohibitions of Tumah remain exactly in effect the same way they were when there was a Beit HaMikdash. And therefore, as a result, all of those chumrot that I think we will get into will apply on a Da'oraisa level, including the Chi of Kares. That is the Shita of Rambam, which is very, very clear. The Ravid is unfortunately a little less clear. The one thing the Ravid says is, in his typically acerbic way, he dismisses the Rambam's view, and he says it's a Dabar Pashut. The Ravid says that if a Tamei person enters even the Makom HaMikdash, even the Holy of Holies, he is not Chayav Kares Bizman Hazeh. Now, that is what the Ravid says, but there's a huge machlokes. What does the Ravid mean? There are many, many commentaries that assume that the Ravid actually says it is mutar legamri. The place has no halachic kedusha, and therefore I, no matter how tamei I am, can even walk into the area of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. It is mutar legamri, according to the Ravid. Many other Mephorshim point out, if that's what the Ravid would have wanted to say, he should have just said Mutar Lagamri. Why does he say the words, you're not Chayav Kares? So they learn, and Rav Kook is actually a prominent example of this. It's interesting. Rav Kook, we would normally associate with more of a Zionist leaning, and yet he was very machmer, even in the Ravid, to say that the Iser of entering the Makom HaMikdash, now we haven't yet defined what that area is an Iser D'oraisa, even according to the Ravid, and the Ravid simply exempts it from a Chi of Kares. And a number of other poskim follow Rav Kook's understanding. There's a third view that the Ravid would say it's an Iser D'Rabbanan. So we have three different views: Mutar Lagamri, Iser D'Oraisa, no Kares, Iser D'Rabbanan, and of course, obviously, no Kares. I just want to point out, this is not our topic for today, maybe it'll be another topic, that the Rambam is obviously stricter than the Ravid by saying that the Kedushat HaMakom is still there. But actually, in reality, it turns out that the Rambam will be lenient in the sense that since the Rambam maintains that the holiness of the Mikdash is intact, the Rambam might acknowledge the possibility of bringing korbanos today, because essentially you have a functioning Beit HaMikdash, while the Ravid would aser. So the Ravid might be makil on entering, but will be strict on korbanos. He would actually treat korbanos b'makom HaMikdash like shechutei chutz, like bringing a korban outside of the Beit HaMikdash. Mashenkin, the Rambam, might actually allow the bringing of the Korban Pesach and the like, because he would allow people to enter for that purpose because of Tuma Hutra Bitsibar. In fact, Rabbi Kivager basically says, going all the way back more than 200 years ago, that essentially, since we cannot be machria between the Rambam and the Ravid, we have to follow the chumrot of both opinions. We have to be machmer like the Rambam, that Kenisa L'makom HaMikdash for Eitame is a chi of kares. But we have to be machmer like the Ravid, that the Kedusha lapsed, so we don't have the permissibility of Karbanos, even though those two rulings are inconsistent. Now, I just want to say, the vast majority, however you learn the Ravid, this is a three-way interpretation of the Ravid, the vast majority of poskim, in fact, do follow the Rambam, and therefore they regard the Makom HaMikdash as having the sanctity on a Doraisa level, that if a Tamei person enters that Makom, and I think we'll discuss what Makom that is exactly, it's not necessarily the whole Arabayas, but we would poskim there is a Chiyuv Kares, based on the Rambam's view.
So let's go back to the Rambam, because as you mentioned, most postim are in the camp of the Rambam. What areas are we talking about? And on a high level, I guess we can divide it up between the Azara of the Beis HaMikdash, which is 187 by 135 Amas, whatever an Amma is. Hopefully we'll get an explanation on that. So it could be the Azara, it can be the Harabais, 500 by 500 Amas, or nowadays the area that is the Temple Mount. We typically call it Harabais, but the non-halachic Harabais is a much larger area, the Temple Mount. So what was the Rambam referring to when there's still an Isser Dereis and a Karis?
Okay, so what I want to do is I first want to refer to the areas halachically, as opposed to where they would actually be situated on the Temple Mount. Because where they would actually be situated is a problem of enormous complexity. That's a combination of halachic knowledge and archaeological finding. Let me just talk about the places, and then we'll talk about where those places are located. And that is, as you say, the Mishnah Maseches Midos, a whole tractate of the Mishnah, lays out exactly the architecture and the dimensions of the various parts of the Beit HaMikdash. And essentially, here is the basic rule. The Torah divides the Jewish camp into three camps. There is Machaneh Yisrael, the camp of the Israelites. There is the camp of the Levites, that's in the middle. And then there is the camp of the Shekhinah, the divine presence, that in the Midbar was the Mishkan and the courtyard of the Mishkan. When you move this over to Eretz Yisrael proper, it turns out that Machaneh Yisrael is any city in Eretz Yisrael that is walled. That would include, let's say, the old city of Yerushalayim. Machaneh Levia would be the outer part of the Temple Mount. And Machaneh Shekhinah would start essentially with what is Doraisa, what is called the Azara, the courtyard of the Temple, and of course the Heichal and the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So the way it works is the following. On a Torah level, if a person is a Tamei Nes, I'm in contact with a dead body, I am mutter in Machaneh Yisrael, of course, and I'm even mutter in Machaneh Levia. I'm mutter in the Har HaBayis until I get to the Azara, which is Ezras, it includes Ezras Yisrael, and then Ezras Kohanim, and then the Mizbeach, and then the Heichal. Now, rabbinically, they did extend the prohibition of Tamei Nes to further out within the Temple Mount to an area that was called the Chil. If you'd be walking through the Temple Mount, you would encounter a soreg, a wicker fence, and beyond the wicker fence would be an area called the Chil. It was not very wide, and the Mishnah in Kalim indicates that the Chil, midrabanan, goyim and Tamei Mason, are not allowed to go. So what comes out is the following. On the Har HaBayis proper, until you get to the Chil, there is no prohibition, even midrabanan, of a Tamei Mace going. Once he hits the Chil, there's an Isser Derabanan of a Tamei Mace, and only when he hits the Azara will there be a Chi of Kares, even like the Rambam, who maintains there's a Chi of Kares. So it's very, very clear that there absolutely is an outer perimeter of the Har HaBayis in which a Tamei Mace could go. Now, let me just clarify that the outer rim of the Har HaBayis is still Machaneh Levia, even before you get to the Chil. And Machaneh Levia, a Tamei Mace can go, but there are certain tumas that cannot go. A woman that's a Nida cannot be there. A man that had a seminal emission cannot be there. So there will be Tameim that cannot go even to the outer rim of the Har HaBayis. But then we get into another problem, that even the outer rim of the Har HaBayit may not be the outer rim of the Temple Mount. The Temple Mount, as presently circumscribed by its walls, is more than double the Shetach of the 500 Amos by 500 Amos of that. So the point I'm making is, it gets very, very complicated.
Other Rishonim. Has anyone else become of prominence in the views of the Achronim?
Well, there are different shitas on this. Some of it is anecdotal evidence more than writing, meaning there is some evidence that some of the Balei Tosfos who came to Eretz Yisrael went up on the Har HaBayit. But that gets a little complicated because some of them who went up actually brought a Korban Pesach. And that really does not address our issue because if you hold, you can bring a Korban Pesach, you're allowed to go in because of Tumah HaTrib et Sibur. So that wouldn't automatically allow Kenisa. Some show from a letter of the Rambam when the Rambam was an adolescent, his family was in Eretz Yisrael. And although obviously the Rambam shita would be you couldn't go to the Azara, but there is some evidence in letters of the Rambam that he himself ascended the Har HaBayit, presumably not in what would be called the Azara. So that's a pretty strong raya that even the Rambam that's Machmir may have ascended the Har HaBayit itself. And then we have a very famous tshuva. I'm not clear if you call him a Rishon or a very early Acharon from the Radvaz in the time of Rabbi Yosef Karo, Rabbi David Ben Zimra, who clearly, absolutely indicates with exact measurements, although his conclusions are questioned, that there are many areas of the Har HaBayit that one would be allowed to go. So we do have the Meiri, we do have the Rambam, we do have some of the Balei HaTosfos, we do have the Radvaz, all of which indicated some type of Kenisa to the Har HaBayit. At the other extreme, we do have a view of the Kafter of Aferach, who lived in the 1300s, Rav Ishtori Haparchi, who was both a great, great traveler and geographer, as well as a posek and a Baal Halacha. So it's interesting that Kafter Veferach is a sefer that two different groups of people are interested in, and they don't necessarily overlap. Talmidei Chachamim are mainly interested in the halachic analysis, and other people, academics, are very much interested in the geographical description. So it's a sefer that combines both ideas. And the Kafter Veferach does record a minhag in his time that Jews did not daven, did not enter within the walls of the Temple Mount on any side, and all of their tefillot were outside. Now, that on some level may be even more machmir, because that is prohibiting all people from entering any part of the Temple Mount, even if it doesn't have the Kedushat Har HaBayit. Now, it's a little ambiguous if he was stating this as a halacha, because it's something like he says, Jews are not allowed to enter. Does he mean al-pi halacha, not allowed to enter? Or does he mean the Muslims didn't allow them to enter? It's not 100% clear if the Kafter Veferach is just recording the prevailing practice or he's giving a halachic ruling. Nevertheless, as you write in your excellent article, there are many that do interpret the Kafter Veferach as recording a minhag to be machmer al-pi din, that nobody is nichnas in any part of the Temple Mounts, even the part that may not have the technical kedusha of the Har HaBayit, presumably as a gezeira or hachaka, just a way of being careful not to cross a boundary.
Mm-hmm. So let's fast forward now. We've gone through the Rishonim, the, we'll say, contemporary or recent Achronim, Rav Eliashiv, Rav Avadi Yosef, Diane Weiss, and the Minchas Yitzchak Tzitz Eliezer, the Stipler. What's the psak? Is there a consensus on can people go up? Can people go on to the Temple Mount, or should they not go up?
Well, you know, in spite of the fact that other than the Kafter Veferach, it's very, very clear, like all Rishonim, there will be some areas of the Temple Mount that a Tamei is allowed to go to. I mean, that's very, very clear, these some areas. Nevertheless, as you correctly note, what we might call, I don't want to say all the Gedolim, because on the other side there are Gedolim also, but what we call the Gedolim of the yeshiva world, let's say, the Haredi yeshiva world, Rav Avadja, Arang Sfardim, the Minchas Yitzchak, the Tzitz Eliezer, even Rav Unterman, who's actually the Rafa Rashi back in the 60s and 70s, Rav El Yashiv, Rav Chaim Kanievsky, Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, all of them took the position that nobody should go on any part of the Har HaBayit, even the outer part of the Temple Mount, that halachically wouldn't even have the Kedusha of Machane Levia. And presumably their concern was largely because of Pritzis Geter, quite literally, meaning once you're allowing people to enter, not everybody's going to be careful. You walk a little, it's like walking through a minefield. If somebody told me, well, you can walk through a minefield as long as you stay 6 inches away from this place and that place. Well, you know, a person sneezes, a person trips. You could very easily mistake it. So I would have to say that the Gedolim who Aser don't really Aser because they say, you know, it's Aser. But they say that it's not for us to assume that we can be confident in the boundaries and therefore we have to be machmir because of the risk of accident is just too great. And again, we didn't really talk about this, but let me just point out that after going through all of these shetachim that are mutter and aser, there's a tremendous uncertainty where they are, meaning how do you overlay the Beis HaMikdash and the Azara and the Chil on the present configuration of the Temple Mount? For example, the Radvaz took the position in his tshuva that the Dome of the Rock, the rock in the Dome of the Rock, is the Evan Shasiyah, the foundation stone of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. And you can compute the Temple and the Azara from the Dome of the Rock going eastward, because the Kodesh HaKadoshim is the west part of the Hecha. On the other hand, many people have argued that the Dome of the Rock, or the Rock, is not the Evan Shasiyah, it's the Mokom HaMizbeach, and the Kodesh HaKadoshim would be more than 100 amos to the west of that. And that would change the configuration totally. So even if you identify, you know, what areas are mutter, where those areas are on the Temple Mount is enormously. I just mentioned two views: Dome of the Rock, the Rock of the Dome of the Rock, the Kodesh HaKadoshim with the Mokom HaMizbeach, and that makes a tremendous difference how the Beis HaMikdash is configured. Let me mention: I believe there are at least six other views about this, and I'm really not an expert of it. But this is one of the areas where there's tremendous uncertainty, and for a posed to be machria that he tells you where the Mokom HaMikdash is and where is the Azara and where is the Chayil, you have to have very, very broad shoulders. And I think that the Gedolei HaPoskim said it is better not to get involved in that type of difficulty.
Yeah, so there are people that go up. I would assume that there is etzad to be makel. So who's being makel, and on what basis, if there's so much uncertainty in how we pass the dimensions?
There are a few mekelim. One person who was a very, very chashuv Talmud Chacham that we tragically lost last year, of Nachum Rabinovich, Zichrono Livracha, the Rosh Yeshiva in Maala Adumim, held that it was mutter. Rav Moshe Tendler, he should be well himself when he was healthier, would come to Yerushalayim and make his aliyah to the Har HaBayit every year. He held that it was mutter, and he claimed that Rav Moshe Feinstein himself held that there were certain areas. Again, I did not see a written tshuva to that effect, but Rav Moshe Tendler claimed that his father-in-law muttered it as well. We have many dati lemi, Rav Lior. Again, these are chashuva people. So I don't want to say it's a division between Haredi versus Dati Leumi, although it more or less is that. But still, you do have people from both sides. I believe there are some poskim in Belz, for example, who matured Aliyah to the Har HaBayit. So it's kind of a mix. It's a mix. And there were poskim of Dati Leumi who ushered Rav Unterman. Rav Unterman was a great, great leader of Mizrahi. And he was the one that ushered it years ago after the Six Day War. So although it is true that a lot of the machlokas is along the nationalistic lines, it's not exclusively so. And basically, the primary area is this. Again, I think we did establish that except for the minhag that is recorded by the Kafter B'Perach, which, you know, should be taken into account, obviously, halachically, there clearly are areas that you'd be allowed to go. You clearly are. So the question becomes, are you confident enough in your identification that you would be makel lemaisa? So that's kind of the machlokas, meaning it's not so much a machlokas in principle as it is a machlokas in the confidence of how you configure the Mokom HaMikdash. Now, I understand that Rav Herschel Schechter himself said that mitzido, he would be makel, but he felt if the Rabbanut was machmir, it is not proper for us to violate the directions of the Rabbanut in Eretz Yisrael. So that's interesting. But he actually felt, in principle, he would be naita to be mako as well.
So if people are being mako and they're going up and avoiding certain areas, whatever they decide is the required area to avoid it, is there a requirement then to go to mikvah first? I guess if you're going to go into certain areas and not certain areas, you have to...
So first of all, it's very, very obvious that men, you know, so in other words, a man that's all of us are tamei meis, we're stuck, we can't do anything about that. So the chil and the azara are out of limits, according to everybody. The rest of the Har HaBayit, the issue would be for a balkeri or a zav. And in order to take off that tuma, one would have to go to the mikvah. And since every man could be assumed to be a balkeri, he would have to go to the mikvah. He does not have to wait until nightfall, because even though he would be a tful yom, a tful yom is permitted in Machaneh Leviya, although not in Machane Shechina. A woman that is a Nida cannot enter any part of the sanctified area of the Harabayat, and probably we would include any part of the Temple Mount, but certainly the sanctified part of the Harabayat. Since Bizman Azeh, single women do not go to the mikvah, there is really no halachic way that a single woman would be allowed to go to any part of the Harabayat because of the Tuma of Nida. And I don't think we're going to start asking women, are you a Nida, are you not a Nida, etc., when if they have them to go. So I'm assuming, I don't know for sure, that the programs that do take people to the Harabayat do not take women to the Harabayat. And I'm assuming that. And that would make a lot of sense. But the men would have to go to the mikvah the day that they go. And there are many, many halachas. You know, there's holiness. You know, if you want to go to the Harabayat, there are rules. It's not just another tourist attraction. Like, in fact, it's much more chamor than visiting the Kaitel, which is so holy. You're not allowed to wear shoes of leather. So you either go barefoot, which is actually the best thing to do, go barefoot, or you wear slippers or something like Yom Kippur. You're not allowed to have money or credit cards or checks open. We do pass them, they can be in your pocket, but they shouldn't be open or clearly visible because people shouldn't think you're coming there for commerce. Obviously, the laws of Tzniut, which are always important, are extra important. And the Harabayat, because there's a mitzvah called Mora Mikdash, reverence for the Mikdash, which encompasses a lot of the Har Habayas. The Tzniut would be important. And this is for men as well. You don't go with a tank top or with shorts. Even if it's not a violation of modesty in terms of the laws of women, but a man himself should not go that way. So, and also the halacha is brought down generally. One does not go in the Harabayas unless one is going for a mitzvah purpose. You don't just go as a tourist attraction.
So what's your mitzvah?
What mitzvah? So what mitzvah is it? I mean, I want to dive in mincha. I mean, first of all, assuming I can get away with it, that's a whole other question. But let's assume that Emir Sashem, it should be that Yidden should be able to daven in the Harabayas. Would that be called a mitzvah? I mean, on one hand, davening mincha is a mitzvah, but is there a mitzvah to daven mincha with dafka in the Harabayas? It's not clear. Let me go back to Shlomo HaMelech, going all the way back to the dedication of the first Beis HaMikdash. Shlomo HaMelech prayed that the Mikdash should be the focal point of the tefillahs of everybody in the world, even the Goyim. And of course, to this very day, the halacha is that we face the Makom HaMikdash and the Kodesh HaKodashim. The rest of the world faces Yerushalayim, but in Yerushalayim specifically, we're supposed to face towards the Kodesh HaKodashim. So one could say that assuming you'd be allowed to go, there would be an inyan, enough of a tzarich mitzvah, that your tefillahs are in a place that's more makobel. I did see the hachraza from some of the matirim that they quoted a pasuk in Riei, L'shichnai sidrashu, seek out God's residence, ubasa shama, and they want to say that that kind of makes it a mitzvah to go to the Harabayas. Again, I'm not sure if there's a makor in Chazal for that interpretation, because that pasuk is really talking about bringing korbanos, meaning vaveisim shama. You're not allowed to bring korbanos outside of the Makom HaMikdash. You got to go to Hashem's dwelling place. But still, I could understand that even if something is not a mitzvah, but the Torah might be indicating indirectly that it's a chashuva inyan. But there is one thing I do want to add. I've heard the suggestion made that for the Shalosh Regalim, for the three pilgrimage festivals, Pesach, Shavuot, Sukkot, there is a specific mitzvah to be Ayla to the Harabayas. And therefore, we should, if there's any hetra to go, we should encourage it. La'anias daiti, I think that's absolutely a mistake. And I think it's a mistake for two reasons. First of all, the mitzvah of Aliyah L'Regel is a mitzvah to go into the Azara. Yeira'eh calls, only for men, Yeira'eh calls Zechorcha Espenei Hashem Elokecha. Now, going into the Azara is the red line that cannot be crossed, according to any view. Wherever the Azara is, unless you follow the Ravid that the Paiskim don't follow, and even like the Ravid, there are interpretations. A Tomei Mace cannot go into the Azara. According to the Rambam, you're Chayiv Kares. So even if you matur Kenisa L'Harabayas, nobody is going to be Makayim Ayla Regel by going into the Harabayas, because Aliyah L'Regel requires Azara, and Azara you for sure can't go in. So Aliyah L'Regel is not going to be accomplished. Moreover, since you're not going to bring a Korban, there's a lav in the Torah that when you see Hashem in the Azara, Lo yera'u panai rekam. Do not be seen by God empty-handed. So fakert, one might argue even, for me to be eila regel without a korban is a bigger aveira than not being eila regel. Because if I'm not eila regel at all, I am mevatel a mitzvah saseh of yera'eh called zechorcha. If I'm eila regel and I don't bring a korban, I'm over on a lav. Lo yera'u panai rekam. So to use aliyah le regel as a type of reason to justify kinesa l'arabayis, I think is a non sequitur. So I would not use that as the mitzvah that's connected. Now, people do say there's an inyan of coming to Yerushalayim, etc. But that's an inyan. That's not a mitzvah.
So Rabbi Breitetz, what I'm hearing here is that there are some who are mekilim to go into certain areas. Depending on what areas you're going into, you may have to go to mikvah. But the claim that there is a mitzvah based on the pasuk ubata shama that you should come there, that is, we would say, a weak argument that there's a mitzvah, and to say that there's a mitzvah to be olah l'regel is problematic, even possibly wrong to do. So I've heard some people say if it's causing so much controversy and putting people into sakana, this is what Hamas was claiming, stay away from Al-Aqsa, we're going to bomb you, let them have it meanwhile, and we'll deal with it in the future. Yirtzeh Hashem will be able to build a bayis shlishi. Is there an iser to, I guess, give them control of the Har HaBayis and step back and not permit Jews to go on?
I mean, listen, obviously, to have the Har HaBayis under the effective control of Goyim, who are both terrorists and they want to kill us and they desecrate the place. It's reminiscent of the Gemara in Makos and the Pasuk in Echa, Al Har Tzion Sheshomeim Shualim Hilchubo, that there are foxes running over it. And of course, the people who are there could be described also as Shualim, that are Mechablim, Kramim, as Shira Shirim writes, that Pasuk fits. And it should tear at the heart of every Jew. And hopefully it should inspire us to pray and yearn for the coming of Mashiach. The bottom line is, however, let's go back to all of the issues of territorial concessions and giving up land for peace. The psak that we had from Avadi Yosef and we had from Rav Shach and many, many other poskim were that if giving back land could save Jewish lives, pikuach nefesh overrides any considerations of land. Now, famously, Lubavitcher Rebbe felt that you should not give land back, but even the Rebbe did not say, because you can't give back land. The Rebbe felt, and again, and I think in some degree he was proven correct, that giving back land will not save lives. Giving back land will endanger lives. The point I'm making is, whether you were in favor, whether you supported land for peace or you were against land for peace, the principle was the same. Pikuach nefesh overrides considerations of retaining territory. Rav Soloveitchik famously said, this even applied to Yerushalayim itself. He said, if he knew, of course, we don't know, and the opposite is likely to be the case, but if we knew that giving back anything would save Jewish lives, it is kedai to give it back. So as a result, the notion that we need to have a sovereign presence, even though that endangers Jewish lives, I think is inverting the values. V'chai b'hem is the most important value. Now, keep in mind that I'm not suggesting at all that Israel relinquish its sovereignty over the Temple Mount. It would still be under the control of the army, etc., which would be allowed to patrol it because of Pikuach Nefesh. But the idea that it might be wise for individual people not to put their lives in danger and not to provoke the Gentiles does have a certain validity. Remember, there were times that Kinisa l'Har HaBayit triggered intifadas. There were many, many drastic consequences and people did die. And I can understand fully the desire to assert Jewish sovereignty. But one has to be very, very careful not to create sakanot.
Rabbi Breitetz, I want to thank you so much for joining us. It's always a pleasure having you on the show.
Thank you. It's my pleasure too. You have much hatzlacha. Thank you.
Joining us now is Rabbi Yehuda Glick. Rabbi Glick is a former member of the Knesset. He is known as a Har HaBayis activist. In fact, when you think about pushing for rights for Jews to go on to Har HaBayis, the first name that comes to my mind is Rabbi Glick. He also is the chairman of the Shalom Jerusalem Foundation. Rabbi Glick, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Shama. It's my privilege, and shalom from Yerushalayim to everybody.
So it's good to have you on the show. We are talking about Har HaBayis. I know this is a topic that is very close to your heart. So I'd like to talk specifically about going up, more of a factual discussion. And then I'd like to get more conceptual about the reason that you feel that it's so important that we go up to Har HaBayis. So practically speaking, you're going to go up to Har HaBayis. You've probably gone up hundreds of times, something like that.
More than a thousand times. I go up every week and more than a thousand times. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So how do you prepare and how do you get there? Like, do you go up over the wooden bridge there and, you know, where do you wind up? Just walk us through.
Yeah. Anybody who is not Muslim, the only way to go up is to go up to the wooden bridge. Har HaBayis has 10 gates, but only one of them is open for people who are not Muslim and open only like 4 hours a day. Going up to Har HaBayis is not a fun sightseeing. It's not even learning history. It's going to the palace of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and to go in the courtyards of HaKadosh Baruch Hu needs preparation. And those of you who are familiar with the Mishnah in Kelim, it says there are 10 kedushot in Eretz Yisrael, and 7 of them are Har HaBayis, and the halacha is that before you go up to Har HaBayis, you have to go to mikveh d'oraisa, just like a woman goes to mikveh. Meaning, before you go to the mikveh, you have to brush your teeth, clean your ears, cut your toenails and your footnail and your handnails. But also, the most important is you have to prepare your heart. You have to understand you're entering the palace of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the courtyard of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and therefore you have to like clean your heart from any kind of hate, anger, any kind of negative emotions, and you're standing transparent. It's a local phone call to HaKadosh Baruch Hu.
So you're ready to go. You've made these preparations. You're going over the wooden gate. You're winding up because you're going from the Kosa, which is on the western side, and you're entering from the southwestern side, I assume. So you're ending up on we'll call it the Temple Mount on the whatever side that is there, because you're entering from the southwest side.
Usually you enter from the southwestern corner and you go around, you go all along the south side, then you go all along the east side, all along the northern side, and you come out from the middle of the western side. They don't let you complete the whole circle. You go almost the whole circle.
So you're just walking on the perimeter then. You're never going onto the inside.
Right, because mainly because that's what we have... We got the policemen used to that. That's the way religious Jews do, because halachically, since according to halacha, since we are all tmei meitim, we're not allowed to walk into the area of the mikdash itself. And there are like several opinions exactly where the mikdash itself is. So if we walk on the side and we walk around the mountain close to those side walls, then we're on the safe side on all sides.
Ah, so that's a halachic reason. That's not because of a political or an agreement that Israel has with the Arab countries that we can't go.
Not at all. You see that the people who are non-Jews or non-Muslims, the non-Jews or people who are not religious, they walk around on Har HaBayis wherever they want.
Now, only during those 4 hours, or that's 4 hours limited for Jews?
No, the 4 hours are limited for anybody who's not Muslim. The Har HaBayis is open for people who are not Muslim, as I said, only through the gate on the near the Kotel, near the Shar HaShpot. And it's open from 7:30 in the morning until around 11, and then it's open in the afternoon for one more hour. And that's about it's like 4.5 hours a day.
Okay, now why would you have to go to the mikveh if you're avoiding what is the halachic Har HaBayis?
Because as the Torah describes, according to halacha, there are three machanot. There's machane Shechina, machane Leviya, and machane Yisrael. And machane Yisrael is the whole of Yerushalayim. Machane Leviya is Har HaBayis. Now, to go into machane Leviya, you're allowed to go even if you're tmei meit, but you have to purify yourself. You have to metayer yourself from all the tumah that yotze migufo, meaning keri, yoledet, zava, nida, so you have to go to the mikveh, which is needed for a bal keri. They have to go to the mikveh as needed for a zava.
Now the halachic Har HaBayis is 500 by 500 amos, but the non halachic Temple Mount is more than double that. It's about 150,000 square meters. So outside of what the halachic...
144,000 square meters.
So outside the halachic, the 500 by 500 amos, which is about 62,500 square meters, we would not need to do a tefillah, would we?
That's a machloket, whether when once they added on to Har HaBayit, is it considered part of Har HaBayit? But no matter what, when you're walking on Har HaBayit on the eastern side, the wall there is the original wall. So if the wall there is the original wall, you're walking in the 500 by 500 amos, even if you're doing the outside perimeter, and therefore you're walking into. But I paskin that there's no such thing as going into Har HaBayit without going to mikveh, and the 500 by 500 was what Shlomo Melech did. But when it was widened, and the halachas of Har HaBayit, I believe, are accepted on all of Har HaBayit. There were people who said, "Let's go to the places where you don't need a mikveh. Let's go only to certain corners." But I don't think that's right. I think the halachic should be that once it was mekudosh. It's Mekudosh, and then once they widen it, then the Kedusha goes on all of them, on the widen also.
Oh, very interesting. So you're Makel and going up, but Machmir, as long as you're going up, to assume that the whole...
I'm very Machmir on going up, and Machmir to go up. I don't Makel. I'm very, very Machmir on all these issues, and therefore I go up to Har HaBayit. And I'm also machmir when I go up to Har HaBayit. I don't go into places where there's a suffix.
Very good. Okay, so when you go over, are the police all over the place? Especially you, you're very visible. You're very recognizable. Is it constantly with a police escort, or is it more open game to walking around there without
always? All Jews who have a firm look are demanded to go up with a police escort. But the truth is that we've seen a lot of improvement. I mean, if I would say till 5 years ago, any Jew who would go up, there was always a lot of harassment and incitement, and there were yelling and throwing things, and it was really a very, very an uncomfortable experience. And if 5 years ago, the government, a lot of do it with our activity, outlawed all of those violent activists, Muslim radical political activists, and they pretty much took them, and they're not allowed to be there. And therefore, today going up to Har HaBayit is usually a very quiet experience. Anybody who yells at you immediately is arrested by the police. Anybody who tries to do anything that's offensive is immediately arrested by the police.
Okay. And what are the limitations? Not davening, I understand. You're not allowed to even utter a pasuk when you're going around there.
That's also something that has changed, Baruch Hashem, in the past 2 years. They used to mamash stand and watch your lips. If you move your lips, immediately they would cause you trouble. Today, that's not the situation. Today, as long as you don't, organize a big minion, or they don't let you bring in a sefer Torah. They don't let you bring in any sfarim. They don't let you bring in a sitter. But if you're with the group, and you're even davening, we daven a lot of times. Well, every single day, actually, there's a shacharit mincha minion on the Har HaBayit, but we do it quietly and without demonstrating any kind of activity. Unfortunately, we can't read the Torah, but we have Chazarat Hashat, and we have a lot of the Kaddish and Kedusha on Har HaBayit almost on a daily basis. Birkat Kohanim for sure, but once again, if you don't do it demonstrating and showing off and saying, "Here I am." I think it's also something on a personal level. I mean, we're going up to Har HaBayit is not something you show off. You're not saying, "Here, look who, here I am. Look what I can do." It's an amida in front of Hashem. It's standing in front of Hashem. It's understanding that you're in the presence of Hashem, and understanding that this is the holiest place in the world, and therefore you go up to Anava, the Regishut, and really it's a sensitive place. You don't do. We're not there to promote any agendas. We're there to daven to Hashem.
And this is with Talis and Tefillin?
Nothing that looks. Nothing, no religious object, meaning not a sitter, not a chumash, not a lulav, not a shofar, not a talis, not a tefillin. Tzitzis you can wear. If you wear a talis under your clothes and nobody sees it, then you can do that. But they don't allow you to bring anything, any religious objects on there. But by the way, not only for Jews, l'havdil elif alfei avdolah, They don't let the Christians go up, not with the cross or not with the oil, whatever, or anything, that any religious object that's not a Muslim object is considered offensive to the Muslims.
Interesting. Now, if we could change our hats a little bit and talk politics, we just unfortunately or fortunately had a war. Hopefully we've taken out a lot of the infrastructure of Hamas, that it doesn't have to happen in the near future again, but who knows? And one of their claims was that we're touching Al-Aqsa, or we're doing X, Y, and Z to Al-Aqsa. Did something change in our policies, or is this just a made-up, fabricated claim by Hamas in order to try to flex their muscles?
Look, the Hamas have learned that using the name, saying the word Al-Aqsa to bring, raise the atmosphere and raise the flames. It has nothing to do with anything to do with facts. I mean, already in February, the Hamas announced that if they're going to cancel the elections for the Palestinian Authority, they're gonna cause a trouble because they felt that that the elections. But now to cause the riots because of canceling elections doesn't sell too good. So they said it's because of Har HaBayit. Now you have to remember, Har HaBayit. They said it was Har HaBayit was closed the day they canceled. They even canceled the march in Yerushalayim. And we say that there's nothing to do with the facts. The facts are that there's no change whatsoever on Har HaBayit, and unfortunately, we're not allowed to even carry an Israeli flag on Har HaBayit. And I said on this year, when Yerushalayim Day fell out on the last days of Ramadan, they closed up to Har HaBayit completely. So Har HaBayit was closed. Marches were canceled. They didn't let people go into Shar Shechem. It's a good excuse because it sells very well, but and we see it throughout history. I think in the 2000 according to all the Israeli intelligence, it was a planned intifada. They started it when Arik Sharon went up to Har HaBayit. Everybody knows that was an excuse, and once in a while they use these excuses, but it's nothing to do with reality.
Right, right. Okay, so talk to us about why is it important to go up to Har HaBayit? Is it to show that we have a presence there and it's important for us?
No. Not in my eyes, not at all. I'm not there to show anybody anything. I'm there to, first of all, there's a mitzvah. The Shichnot Yidrashu Uvat Hashem. There's a mitzvah. The only place in the world where a Jew is obligated to go, for sure, Shalosh Pa'im B'Shana Yireh called Churcha, but even that, the Shichnot Yidrashu Uvat Hashem, there's a mitzvah to go to Har HaBayit. Not only that, the Torah says, you don't make you shouldn't daven to Hashem in every single corner. There's one place. Lo tasun kem l'shem lokechem, and you don't do kiminagei agoyim and have a daven place every else. But the place to do is mikdash. But I think it's way beyond that. Unfortunately, we have pretty much forgotten that our goal in the world, and that's what you know. We have five fast days that chachamim were metaken. Four of them are zecher lechurban. The mikdash plays a major role. You eat a piece of cake. You make a alamichya in the middle of alamichya. You say v'nei Yerushalayim rakodesh v'aleinu b'sochav v'savchenu v'na nishbachecha v'leichalechu. And the whole concept of Beit Hamikdash is a major central role in the Torah. The Torah has 100 psukim about Shabbos and 1,000 psukim about Mikdash. And the whole concept of our life is l'shana abad Yerushalayim habinuya, in the mitzvah of building Beit Hamikdash and putting the Mikdash in the center of our life. It's not only an obligation for us. It's an obligation for the entire world. We are obligated to announce to the world, Hashem Echad Ushmo Echad. And now, this is the place where Hashem chose to rest His divine presence, Bachar L'Shaken Shmo Sham. And when this place is in a situation of Chil Hashem, they're using the place to encourage terror, using the place to talk out against Hashem Yisbarach, using a place to do the opposite things, to encourage Shvichos Damim. Shvichos Damim is the only thing that's opposite to Hashem Shofech Dam Adam that he's about to tell him Elohim Asayit Adam. The whole idea of shame Hashem in this world is to announce that Hashem is Elohim Chayim. And therefore, when the place turned into a place of hate and turned into a place of anti-Hashem Yisbarach, we are obligated. This is actually a Chilul Hashem leaving the place in the hands, as if we're not interested, as if we don't want any part of our HaBayit. And the whole center of our life is beyond brachas and kashrus and Shabbos and Torah and Mishpacha, is that we are here, chosen by Hashem to announce His oneness in the world. That's, and the way to do it is the place where He told us to do it.
Right. So why would you say there are so many poskim who say to not go up, to not be over there? And they don't discuss this mitzvah. You know, the pashtus of that puzzle is Shichnot Yeshua is talking about when we have korbanos, and maybe it's even talking about Shiloh. And it's not brought in the Monia mitzvahs as a mitzvah to just be up, you know, and the Shalosh Regalim is when we have a base of Mikdash, strictly speaking. So there's so many poskim that say not to go up to the entire Temple Mount. So where do we see that disconnect between what some of the poskim, many of the poskim, at least the Haredi poskim are saying, and other poskim?
First of all, all the Monday mitzvahs count. The mitzvah to build base of Mikdash and the mitzvah to go up the Arabai Shlosh Regalim is definitely counted in all the Monday mitzvahs, every single one of them. But beyond that, and I think if you read through the poskim, talk about the Isser going to Harabayit, none of them say there's an Isser in itself. They all talk about an Isser, Gzeira Shema. Maybe we don't know where the place is. Maybe we're not Tahar. But these are all things that are chashas, that are things we can overcome. We go only in the places that are 100% sure it's mutter to go. We go only, makbid very much, on Kedusha and Tara. So if we have a place where there's a Chilul Hashem, and if we have a place where we can figure out all the things. Now, yes, for sure, many years Jews didn't go to Har Habayit. It's pretty much like 200 years. You have to know that till 200 years ago, all the time Jews went up to Har Habayit. The Rambam said he made a yontif for the day he went up to Har Habayit. Bob Cheshvan, he was zocher to go up to Har Habayit. He made a yontif not only for himself, for his generation, for the schus of going up to Har Habayit. Throughout history, again and again, all Jews came to Israel went up to Har Habayit. The truth is that 200 years ago, when Muslims did not allow people to go up to Har Habayit, the Talmid de Agra came, and the Rebbe Saul Shiklov is actually the first one who said, "Listen, we don't know exactly, and therefore we're not going." And many people just copy what he said, but the situation has changed. We know today. We know exactly all the shittas. If we take all the shittas together, still 70% of Har Habayit you can walk on there, and therefore. The reason the Rabbanim are machmir because people right prefer, you know, Rav Shlomo Shiklov said we don't know, but people and unfortunately, I mean, people are for sure Rabbanim by definition are trying to not to make any changes. Chodesh Atur Me'Atura. But Baruch Hashem, I can say that today more than 300 Rabbanim of Eretz Israel encourage going up to Har Habayit. The numbers are growing all the time. When I started going up to Har Habayit, there were only 3 Rabbanim. That was 30 years. Baruch Hashem, today we have more than 300 rabbanim, and I believe that even in the Haredi world, it's happening. I've spoken to many Haredi rabbis who told me that they support me, but they don't have the guts to come out publicly. Slowly, things that happen will change. You know, when the Chassidish movement began, all the rabbis said it's apikoros, and you're not accounted for minyan. Baruch Hashem, things changed, and I think that this is the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu creates things. That Hashem, I think the Hasidic movement gained from the Hitnagdut. And the same thing also I see when I go up to Har Habayit, ever since the Hitnagdut going to Har Habayit caused at least 5 Sforim to be written about the halachot of Har Habayit. If there wasn't the anti to Har Habayit, the Sforim would not be written. So one of the ways that Hashem helps us learn Torah is that he develops what's called a thesis and an antithesis, and then we develop a synthesis. I believe, as I said, when I started going to Har Habayit, there were maybe 100 Jews who went to Har Habayit a year. Now we've reached a point where 50,000 go up, and a lot of our activity in the Shalom Jerusalem Foundation is really to turn the Har Habayit into a world center of calling in the name of Hashem. And that's our goal, and if we're right now, the three weeks is ours to remind ourselves that we have a mission to the world, to announce to the world that Hashem Echad Ushmo Echad, and that's what the Shalom Jerusalem Foundation is committed to, and that's what we do. And many, many people, we encourage them to go up, but of course we encourage them to do it by a lot of the restrictions.
Very good. Rabbi Glick, I want to thank you so much for joining us. Certainly a real education. I really appreciate it.
We should be seeing the rebuilding of the Yerushalayim as soon as possible. And anybody who wants to participate in what we're doing, you're welcome to partner with us at shalomjerusalem.org. Shalomjerusalem.org is Shalom Jerusalem Foundation. And Emir Tashem, which be zocheh, with a lot of Ahavat Yisrael, to see the rebuilding and the flourishing of Hashem's name all over the world as a beam of light, as a beacon of light, as a illuminating the world with his light. We need it. We need it.
Shkoyach, thank you so much. Joining us now is Rabbi Menachem Glick. Rabbi Glick is the senior mashkiach at Yeshivas Beis Yisrael in Yerushalayim. He is the brother of Yehuda Glick. Yehuda Glick is the brother of Rabbi Glick, so they are brothers together. And I simply thought it'd be interesting to hear maybe the same viewpoint or maybe different viewpoints from the two brothers. It's not intending to create any shalom bias between them, but simply Eilu ve'eilu divrei Elokim Chaim. Rabbi Glick, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for giving me the privilege to be on this broadcast. As a schus to have Torah given over to so many people, you must have a big schus. They say that Chofetz Chaim said about the Daf Yomi, right? The schus. I mean, maybe it wasn't Chofetz Chaim. One of them said it. The schus that he became, the Megaldim schus like the Zakai that Meir Shapiro had, that schus. Something great. You must have some schus to have this privilege to give over this Torah to so many people.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Rabbi Glick. So, Rabbi Glick, you are the mashkiach ruchani. That means you are responsible. That's like a double responsibility. Mashkiach is like supervising, and ruchani is the ruchnius of hundreds of boys throughout the years, thousands of boys in the yeshiva. If a student comes to you and says, I want to go on to Har HaBayis with a tour with my Rebbe from high school who is coming to visit, whatever it is, what do you tell him?
I would tell him that unequivocally, I would tell him he should not go.
And why is that?
Well, in many years ago, they put out a Hodah Vazhara from many, many Rabbonim, which is a warning. It says from Abisra Yehuda Unterman, of Chaskel Abramsky, of Yitzchak Nisim, of Yosef Sholem El Yashiv, of Adi Yosef, of Shlomo Zalman Orbach, all signed, not only signed from the Haredi side, even the non-Haredi side. Of Svi Yehuda Cook is signed here, and of Shlomo Yosef Zevin is signed here, and Chaim David Alevi from Tel Aviv, and many, many. All the many, I can't say all, but many of the Dayanim and Rabbanim who were around in 1967, many of Sal Zolti, the Rabbi Yerushalayim, the Rabbi of Tel Aviv, all signed that one should not go on to Har HaBayis and for no reason whatsoever. And not only did they say that, they said, listen to what they wrote, "Ubeschus zois, beschus that you do not go on Har HaBayis." In the schus, not going Har HaBayis will be zoiche to have the privilege of the Gula Shleima.
Okay, so the Har HaBayis is what you mentioned, just so we can get the definitions. There's the halachic Har HaBayis, historically was 500 by 500 square meters. And there is also the Har HaBayis, which is the term which it's actually easier in English because we can call it the Temple Mount. So we have a different term. We can call Har HaBayis the halachic area, 500 by 500 square meters, approximately, depending on the Amah, 62,000 square meters. And the contemporary Temple Mount, which is dramatically larger, approximately 150,000 square meters. So when the Rabbanim were talking in 1967 about not going onto Har HaBayis, were they referring to the halachic concept, 500 by 500 square meters, square amas, excuse me, or were they talking about the contemporary Temple Mount, which is the entire area between the walls as it stands today?
Well, from their warning, it says here, Anuchozru Mazhirim, that you should not go in through Kol Shetach Har HaBayis. B'li Hevdel Derech Eze Shar Shenechosim Bo. Does it make a difference how you go in? They said that no one should go in without, for no reason, they said.
Oh, so they're talking about the Temple Mount, the entire Temple Mount.
The entire Temple Mount. One should not go on.
Now, are you familiar with any major poskim who permit entering?
Not that I know of. There was Rav Goren, who was the one who did allow people to go on, but he was definitely not the most major poskim of Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. In fact, in the Sefer Devar Yaakov from Rav Yaakov Adis, who people know at the Kosel, he brings that Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, even though he was known for speaking softly, he was always known, but he was betokef gadol, that people should not go on Har HaBayis at all, even though there could be reasons al pi halacha that it would be possible, but still people should refrain from going Har HaBayis.
So to ask the question, if I don't want to say halachically, if historically it was the Isra was, let's say, 500 by 500 square amas or even less, the Azara on a Deraisa level or within the Chel on a Derabanan level, well, why are the contemporary poskim so machmir to not enter into the entire Temple Mount?
Okay, there are many reasons to it, and we have to go into a deeper understanding of the whole concept of going on to the Temple Mount. There's let's go back into halachic reasons. There's halachic, there are places, there are different machanos. There's machane shkina, machane levia. The machane shkina, obviously, that we all know, except for the shitas of Ravid, which is Das Yochid, Rambam already, and most Rishonim already say that going on to Machane Shchina is Isser Koris, and has already brought in Tshuva's Bin Yonsiyah, the Ravid is Das Yochid. The other Rishonim also hold like the Rambam, Smag, Rashi, many Rishonim all agree with the Rambam that going on the Mokoyim, which we'll call it Machane Shchina, is also for Tomei Mesim, and that it will be Isser Koris. And could be, and Tzitz Eliezer says that even the Ravid would admit nowadays that it's also, even according to the Ravid. And even according to those who feel that the Ravid would disagree nowadays, there are many Achroinim who learn up the Ravid that still is an Isser, even though it's not Isser Koris, but it's Isser Lav. That's how many Achroinim learn up the Ravid. So that's going on Machne Shchim. And that's much smaller, 185 by 137 amos. But now that the Machane Levia, which is a place that is also to go on by Tuma Hayotze Negufa, which includes Nida, Zava, Keri, all those Tuma Hayotze Negufa, which is also in the other areas. Now, let's start off with the Tumas Keri and Tuma Zav, which the Stipler already brings in his letter. It's a famous letter the Stipler wrote. The Stipler is signed by the Stipler, the Vizhnitzer Rebbe, the Ozhirover Rebbe, and the Shach already wrote that there's a Shash Zov. And even though many doctors might say that nowadays it's not possible Zov, but could be, very possibly, that what the doctors call Zov is not what we call Zov in Abi Alocha. And the Tumas Zov is even a minute amount of Zov already makes person Zov. And then to go on to Har HaBayis, you need tremendous different ways of becoming Tohar, which are difficult, that you might need a Mayan, and you would need also could be Shevet Akiyim, all different things for Tumas Zov. Right, so and also, there's Tumas Keri, which also has its possibilities, difficulties in coming to her, which is we might need Harav Shemesh, or it might need to go on to Harav Ayis immediately. But that's number one. That's a reason on itself that the person should not go on, because he might have these Isurim of Tumas Keri. So let's get it clear. Let's get this. Machne Shchina and Machne Levia. Machne Shchina is not definite where it is. The Radvaz is the one who says that we trust the Maslims where the Kodesh Kadoshim is. But there are many Achrayim who say we cannot trust the Maslims Chazakah. For example, the Rambam says, for eating truma a kohen, we can't trust the chazaka of a kohen. You need two edim to have a truma to a kohen. And therefore, chazaka is not always acceptable. You might need edim. So even if the Muslims say that is the makom of the Eben Shasiya, many achronim say, we don't know. And there's many reasons to believe that that Eben is not the Eben Shasiya, because that Eben is a large Eben. The Eben Shasiya might be a small Eben.
It was three tvachim.
Right? So let's get back. We start off. Number one, first of all, Machne Shechida is Tomei Meis to also go in. And Machne Leviya, a Tumah Yosef Migufa is also to go in. The difficulties of going to Machne Leviya is because a person has to go to the mikvah and needs tremendous amount of tahira for it. And Machne Shechina, we don't know where Machne Shechina is. That is one reason. But the main reason that Rabbanim Aser, the main reason, if you read the letter of the stipler, Shach, and the same thing you'll see in Chubas Minchas Yitzchak and Tzitz Eliezer, the main reason is, and this is proven, it's proven that it's true. Because you will permit some people go on the Har HaBayis, other people will go on the Har HaBayis even where they're not allowed to go. And this I've seen myself. I met a group of people who call themselves the students Leman Har HaBayis, which are Chiloni students, religious students, who are for Har HaBayis. And I met them, and they are boys and girls, irreligious boys and girls. And girls going on Har HaBayis is definitely a problem. Irreligious girls going on Har HaBayis. Once we go on Har HaBayis, even in a place, even let's say a person would do all the go Shevet Nekiyim, and he'll count 7 days, and he'll go to Amayan, and he'll go to a mikveh, and he'll be Har HaShemesh, and he'll go to mikveh a second time. But what's going to be with the other Yidden? If we go on to Har HaBayis, the other Yidden are going to go further than us. And that's why, that's the main reason that the Talmidei Chacham, the Gedolei Yisrael, were prohibiting going to Har HaBayis and trying to prevent people from going to Har HaBayis. That I think is an important reason, and it's 100% true.
Yeah, somebody told me in shul just the other day that his grandmother, very firm lady, but his grandmother didn't know there's a problem, and she went on to Har HaBayis all the way around Har HaBayis. She only found out afterward that there's an Isser Kares. This is many years ago, and still she regrets it until today. So this is indeed unfortunately a common issue. Certainly somebody who's chiloni is not going to be versed in the halachas of going to mikvah. I don't know many from men who are versed in the halachas of doing a proper tefillah b'mikvah. So certainly there are plenty of people out there who are going on to Har HaBayis that have no clue.
Right. So that's why we have to, if we say we don't go on Har HaBayis, then that will convince other people not to go on Har HaBayis to realize that there's a problem.
Right. So are we missing out on any mitzvahs? Let's say non-shalosh regalim, is there a mitzvah to go daven there as opposed to on the side of the kosel? So you know, one side of the kosel versus the other side of the kosel, is it a bigger mitzvah? Or if we talk about the shalosh regalim, is there a mitzvah to go on the shalosh regalim up to Har HaBayis? So are we missing out on opportunities of mitzvahs that we otherwise could be doing?
There's no mitzvah to go on a Har HaBayis. There's mitzvah of Aliyah LeRegel is to bring a korban when you go to the regal. Could be it's also to go on the opposite. A person who's not allowed to go on a bayis should be without a korban. The opposite. And not only that, in the letter that the Rabbanim wrote, there's a mitzvah of not going to Har HaBayis. You want to hear this? In the letter they write, Gam Yesh Mitzvah Rabba. They call the letter they write, signed by Rav Avadi Yosef, Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, Rabbi Yashiv, Rabbi Yitzchak Nissim, who was not a Haredi, he was from the Mizrahi. Rabbi Chaim David Levi was also Mizrahi, who say, it's a mitzvah not to go on Har HaBayis. What's the mitzvah? The mitzvah is Mora Migdash, Ushmiros. It's a mitzvah to Yishomer the Migdash from Tumah. So when a person does not go on Har HaBayis, besides it, there's no mitzvah to go on Har HaBayis. The mitzvah, according to these Talmidei Chachamim, is a mitzvah not to go.
Uh-huh. Now, I guess a byproduct of that would be as what do the Gedolim say we should do with it? Because in fact, if we're not there and administering things, and the fact is nowadays there are non-Jews all over the place, they have an Isser al Pi Halacha to be going in as well. So do they say we should just not get involved and let them do what they want with it? Or is that actually taking away from the Mora Mikdash as well?
The Gedolim, Rabbi Yassi, at one time paid somebody to stand by the Beis HaMikdash, at the Mokam HaMikdash, to warn people not to go on. We want to do a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah, especially if someone's a Levi, and that was the job of the Levian, to warn people not to go in places where they shouldn't go. So if you want to do something towards the Beis HaMikdash, towards bringing the Geula, is stand there and warn people. That's also another reason that people who might go on to Har HaBayis should realize that in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, there were shomrim who watched to make sure that people didn't go in the wrong places. Now there are no such shomrim. So what you can do is, if you want to do something for the Beis HaMikdash, is go there and be a shomrim and tell people not to go on Har HaBayis. And what we can also do is we can daven. We can daven that Hashem should bring back the Beis HaMikdash from Heira V'Yameinu, and the schus that we don't go on Har HaBayis, the Yeshua should come quickly, and to remind ourselves, the stipler also brings a Tosefta in the second Tosefta in Masechta Shavuos, Perek Aleph, Tosefta Beis, says that the Isser of Tumas HaMikdash is more chomer than all other Isurim. What's the proof the Tosefta brings? On Yom Kippur, we bring so many karbonis, because somebody might have been the shogeg, come and gone into the Mokam HaMikdash. We bring so many, the Soyer Pnimi, the Soyer Chutzoimi. And every Rosh Chodesh, we bring such a carbon. Just the mechaper on somebody who the shogeg went on, how chomer it is going on a Har HaBayis. And that's what the Tosefta says, is more chomer than kol ha'averus. So that's what we want. If somebody wants to do something towards the is try to stand by the where there are ramps to go up the Har HaBayis and tell people, please don't go up. If you don't go up, you'll be mekayim a mitzvah of Mora Mikdash, and you will, according to many, many rabbanim, Talmid HaChacham and Poskim, who are known for their psak, we take out a Shemir Shabbos Kachosu, who is it based on? Shlomo Zalman Orbach. Shlomo Zalman Orbach was very, very, he felt very much that people should not go on. And that's, I think, what we could do. There's a very big mitzvah called Tkiyas Shofar. Everybody agrees that Tkiyas Shofar is a very important mitzvah. But we don't blow shofar on Shabbos, because possibly, if you blow shofar on Shabbos, possibly, somebody will come to carry a shofar. Now, according to many Rishonim, it's very, very difficult to have a Shus Rabin Doraisa. You need 600,000 people. And has what do you call them? Foolish from one side to the other side. Have a Shus Rabin Doraisa, it's very difficult. And still, we don't blow shofar and Rosh Hashanah because we might come to carry. So too, we go on Har HaBayis, somebody might come to go in a place where it's also to go. It's definitely the reason that the Gedolei Yisrael tried to convince people and tell people it's also Isser Chomer to go on Har HaBayis.
Right, and then with the Tkiyas Shofar, it wasn't everyone bringing their shofar. It would be one person bringing for each shul, and hopefully is knowledgeable. Here it could be anyone that's going up.
Right.
Rabbi Glick, thank you so much for joining us. It's been a pleasure having you on the show.